Well, thanks for being here. As Ned said, we are in part two of our Love and Marriage series, and we are really just asking this question: how do you stay together and enjoy it? Because I think these are really two fundamental ideas when it comes to relationships. We want relationships that last. I don't think anyone gets into a relationship expecting it or hoping it'll only go 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years. We want relationships to last, because at the end of the day, we said that's really is the reward of the relationship, is the those that stay together, that's the reward of it. And if you don't stay together, it might be a relief that you're not together anymore, but it's not a reward at all. And so we said, really, when it comes to a marriage, it's about staying together, but it's more than just the commitment. It's more than just staying together. I think everybody would want to say and enter into a relationship saying, I want to enjoy the relationship. I want to enjoy the other person. I don't want to come home from work and just dread having to come inside. I don't have to, you know, dread him coming in or her coming in. I just want to enjoy it. And so that's really kind of what we've been really looking at in this series. And we said, as Ned said, this is not just a marriage series. For those who are single, this is not just for married couples. If you're single, if you have been married, these are really principles that we can apply to all kinds of relationships. So this is really a relationship series. This is a love and marriage series more than the other way around in some ways. And the only really exception to that was really kind of what we talked about last week. Last week we talked about marriage as kind of a unique relationship, different from every other kind of relationship. We said a marriage relationship is a covenant relationship. It's not a contractual relationship, as many people kind of make marriages out to be. A contractual relationship says, well, I will do this if you do that. I'll fulfill mine in the bargain if you fulfill yours. I will provide certain goods and services if you provide goods and services back. And so that's a contractual marriage. We said marriage is so much different and so much better. We said marriage is a covenant relationship, which means this: it's a relationship and it's based upon a promise of future or unconditional love. That when you stood up in front of the other, you know, with the other person at your ceremony, you didn't promise to do if they did this. You just promised, hey, I will always and I will never and I will be there for you, regardless how you treat me, regardless of what you do to me, regardless of what you say, here's how I plan on and I promise to respond to you. So it's about unconditional love. Now, for those of us who are Christ followers, and if you're not a Christ follower this morning, we're just so glad that you're here. And if you're checking things out, and if you're kind of interested in the whole faith thing, we're just so excited that you're here. But for Christ followers, we are called to not just love our spouses unconditionally, we are called to love everybody unconditionally. And that's kind of like a whole new bar that is set. And we're going to get into more of that next week, how Jesus sets the bar to this whole different level of how we are to treat one another. But the Apostle Paul picks up on this idea of unconditional love, and he writes to different churches, and he writes to them kind of expressing it in different ways. But here's one way he says this in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1. He says this: be imitators of God. And that's kind of like, whoa, that's kind of a high bar right there. Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children. And that's the message of Christianity. That when you place your faith in Christ, what happens is you get adopted into God's family. He sees you as one of his children. And so it is a powerful imagery. He says, as dearly loved children, he says, and live a life of love. Just as, and that is a huge statement, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and a sacrifice to God. In other words, we are to love others just the way that Christ loved us. And it's like, well, how did Christ love us? And you can think back, well, what were you like before a Christ follower? All those things that you said and all those things that you did and all those things you even said about maybe Christians and Jesus, everything. He says, I want you to think about that. And even though in spite of all that, Jesus still loved you. Jesus still accepted you. Jesus still forgave you. Jesus still served you. And he says, in that kind of same way, he says, I expect you, I want you to now go and treat others just like that. And we're going to flesh this out more in the weeks to come. And if you're big on lots of scripture in a sermon, I apologize this morning. We're not going to do lots of scripture. We're just going to kind of flesh this idea out in one kind of dynamic way that happens in I think most relationships, if not all relationships. Now, this illustration that I'm about to give you, I'm just going to be upfront. I did not create this my own. I did not make this up. I wish I was that creative, but I heard this talk given. It was by Pastor Anlie Stanley. In fact, he gave it years ago, then he gave it again not too long ago. But he used this illustration that was so helpful in my marriage. It was so practical, and it was so just timely for me that I wanted to pass this on to you. So if you hear anything in this sermon that you like or you think it's worth repeating, this is his stuff, not my stuff, but I wanted to pass this on to you and get him the credit, but you the information. But all of us, especially in a marriage, in a relationship, all of us come in with a box full of desires. All of us, I don't think anyone is exempt from this. All of us come in with a whole box full of desires. Now, if you're younger, if you are kind of more on the younger side of life, if you've never had a serious relationship, maybe you don't really know for sure. Maybe the box of your desires is kind of undefined still. It's not very clear. But if you're engaged, and some of you maybe are engaged this morning, it is so important for you to know what is in your box and what is in the box of desires of your fiance. In fact, we promote marriage and premarital counseling here, and one of the things that we say is you need to figure out what is in your box and what is in your future spouse's box as well. And if you are married, my goodness, you need to know for sure what is in your box and what is in your spouse's box. This is such an important thing. But all of us come into a relationship with desires about how the relationship's going to go, about how the future's going to go. I mean, all of us have desires and plans and dreams and hopes about money and about finances, about how much money we're going to have. We're going to make a lot of money. I don't need to make a lot of money. We're going to save a lot of money. We're going to spend a lot of money. I plan on having a dual income family. I plan on having just one income and you stay at home or I stay at home. I plan on spending. You plan on saving. You handle the budget. I handle the budget. We all have kind of this idea of desires and plans of what we're going to do with all of our money. I think everybody has a desire about how they're, where they're going to live and what kind of house they're going to live in. For some of you, you have a desire, you have hopes and dreams about having this giant big old house someday. Maybe for some of you, you just rather not have a big old house to take care of. You rather just have a condo, an apartment. Some of you maybe want to have a lot of land where you can have chickens and have eggs every day and, you know, bacon and all that kind of stuff. Others of you going, hey, that's what Kroger's for. I don't need chickens. I don't need a lot of land. I don't need to take care of a lot of stuff. I'd rather have something small, something manageable. But we all have some sort of desires and dreams when it comes to where we live. I think all of us have, or a lot of us, you know, maybe have this desire, have about what kind of car we drive. Some of you, maybe you know, some guys especially, maybe you have the car that you had when you were single and you want to keep that car, you know, once you get married. I plan on driving my car, my sports car, all of my life and just getting new sports cars. Others of you, maybe if you're a soccer mom, you know, you just plan on wanting to be a soccer mom and you have a minivan as your hope and your dream or something large because you want to have lots of family. And I think that's another thing that we all have expectations of or desires of. We all, you know, maybe we have desires of having no kids. Maybe for some of us, we want a child. You know, maybe for some of us, we want two children. Maybe for some of us, we had two, but we, you know, two boys. And so let's try for a girl. And so you ended up getting not just one, but two more. You know, I hear that. I hear that can happen to some people. It happened to me. Maybe you want just a big old family, not just four. Maybe you're going for five or going for six. That's just your picture. When you were, you know, that's what I wanted. I wanted just a big old family. For some of you, or I think all of us have some desires about who does the chores and who's doing the cooking and who's doing the cleaning and who's, you know, going to the grocery shopping and what kind of food we buy and what kind of food we prepare. And we all have kind of that. And, you know, Win Miller from the video, he got all that worked out early on. So that was good for him. But we all have some of this. We all have ideas and plans about how we spend our time and our time management. I think, you know, there's some ideas out there about when I get married, well, I'm still going to have lots of time with my guy friends, or I'm going to still have lots of time with my girlfriends, and you know, you do your thing for a while, and I'll do my thing, and we'll just give each other some space on that. Other people think, well, when I get married, I want to just be with my spouse and do everything with my spouse, and we're going to have the same friends and same kind of everything, and that's one way of looking at it. When it comes to maybe going to sleep, you have certain plans and desires about when you go to bed. Some of you like to go to bed early. Some of you desired about staying up late. Some of your desires and hopes is when we get married, we're going to like go to bed together, every night together, like as that's what couples do. Others of you are going, I don't care when you go to bed. I know when I'm going to go to bed, and it doesn't matter when you go to bed. And so there's just all these kind of hopes and dreams when it comes to time management. When it comes to where we live, even, or where we go on vacation, you know, I like it warm. Well, I don't like it too hot. I want to go someplace where it's cooler, where there's no humidity. I want to travel around the world. I want to see Italy and France and China. I want to go, you know, all these places. Others of you are going, I don't even want to leave the country. You know, I don't want to leave in the state maybe even. I just like it here. I don't need to live anywhere else or travel anywhere else. But we all have desires about where we're going to live. And then if you're a guy, guys have desires about what their wives are going to wear to bed every night, and this is probably not one of them, but I just pulled this from my wife's drawer. No, I'm just joking. This has pockets even. This is functional, right? And, you know, women are going, well, I know that he wants me just to feel comfortable at night, you know, just to be myself. He doesn't matter. He doesn't really care what I wear to bed. Probably not. It's true, but that's just what we think. And so when it comes to calendars, you know, when it comes to vacations and holidays, especially, we all have desires about, well, where are we going to spend Christmas this year? Or where are we going to spend Thanksgiving? And you have this desire that every Christmas, you just want to see your parents, or every Thanksgiving, you just want to make it home, you know? And so you have these desires about that, about how we're going to spend vacations and holidays and birthdays. And you just kind of have that mental picture of, I'm just going to be there every time. And then it comes to the whole idea of conflict resolution. You have this desire, you have these desires and plans about how you're going to handle conflict with your spouse. You know, for some of you, it's like, well, I just like to let everything out. I just want to put everything on the table. We're just going to be open and honest, and we're just going to let the cards lay where they, you know, will. And if they get hurt by that, you know, at least it's out in the open, and we can resolve it, and we can fix it. But I'm just kind of the person who I just like to speak my mind. Others of you who are saying, I just don't like conflict at all, and so I like to keep things close to my chest. I'm only going to bring things up when it, you know, is necessary. Some of you, your desires are, I want to resolve the conflict before we go to bed. Like, I'm just making a promise. I will never go to bed, you know, angry kind of thing. Others of you are thinking, well, if you really want to resolve the conflict, just tell me you're sorry and then we can go to bed kind of thing. This is just how I resolve the conflict. But there's all kinds of ways that we can do that. And you have some desires about that. You have some desires and dreams and hopes about how you handle conflict. Now, there is, you know, we could add so much more to this box, and we could just kind of keep going and going, but we all have a box full of desires. Now, the question is, well, where do these all come from? How do we get those things in our boxes? And I think most of the time, it comes from our experiences, and specifically our experiences of growing up in a home, right? What we saw growing up, what we heard growing up, those are the things that we, you know, we respond to, and really, these things are really a response to our experiences, and we can respond to them in one of two ways. We can either avoid those things that we saw and heard and experienced, or we can try to recreate them. For some of you, you saw some things growing up in your home that you said to yourself, I will never be like that. I am never going to do that. I'm never going to treat my wife like that. I'm never going to say that to my husband. I'm never, ever going to do that. In fact, for me, many of you know, I've talked about this, that my parents, when they fought, I mean, they went at each other. I mean, they yelled, they swore, they said things to each other a child should never hear their parents say to each other. And so I made a vow, like, I'm never going to resolve a conflict like that. I'm never going to yell at my spouse. I'm never going to, you know, swear at her. I'm never going to do these things. And this is just one of those things that I just desire in a relationship. I don't like that kind of arguing style. I don't like that kind of conflict style. And so I'm never going to do that. I'm going to avoid that at all cost. But the other way is, some of you saw things that you really loved about growing up and what you loved about what mom and dad did. Some of you said, I really would love to recreate that with my family. I'd really love and recreate that dynamic with my husband, with my wife. And again, in my home, it was every night, like 99% of the time, there was always a hot, and I would say pretty healthy, home-cooked meal waiting for us, prepared for us at the dinner table, almost every night. it was never like, hey, this is just fend for yourself night and here's a cold bowl of cereal, you know, kind of thing. It was always, and if it wasn't prepared that night, it was just a leftover meal from the night before, but it was always hot, it was always prepared, and it was at the dinner table. And I loved that, all right? I thought that's how everybody lived, right? And then I got married, and then I realized that is not how everybody lives. And so Beth did not have that experience growing up at all. She was the cold cereal kind of, you know, growing up. And so I had a desire growing up and, you know, getting into a marriage that this was the way it's going to be. This is how it's going to be. Whether you cook it or I cook it, we're going to have a hot meal, sit down together every night. I just desired that. I wanted to recreate that in my marriage. And so we have all of these experiences that kind of come into play. And so we fill our boxes up with things we're either trying to avoid or trying to recreate in our past experiences. And the thing is, when it comes to our box of desires, we can justify everything in our box. Everything in our box makes a whole lot of sense. Everything we can say is reasonable. Everything we can give an excuse for it or justification for it, it just makes a lot of sense to us. But here's the deal. Whose box is this? It's mine. It's what I desire. This is my box. Now, the dynamic is, and this is how it goes, because we just can't help ourselves. We take our box full of desires, and we hand it off to our spouse and say, here, take it. It's yours. Help me, you know, make this a reality. This is yours now to do something with. And it's, you know, and this happens early on. Maybe for some of you, you would say, this is why I married you. This is why I even started dating you. This is why I said yes to you, even though my parents told me not to marry you. This is why I did this when your parents told me not to marry you. I still said yes because here's the deal. I plan on you helping me take care of all my desires. But what happens is when we hand them the box of desires, it doesn't feel like desires to them. To them, it feels like something else. To them, it feels like a box full of expectations. Here's what I expect from you. It feels like a weight. It feels like a burden. It feels like a responsibility. It feels like a to-do list. It feels like if I don't accomplish these things, then I'm going to let you down. I'm going to disappoint you. It feels like a bunch of expectations. And so the question is, well, what do we do? Because, you know, in a marriage, oftentimes, it's an exchange of boxes. Here's what I expect from you, and here's what I expect from you. And each box is different. No two lives are ever the same. No two set of experiences are ever the same, and how we respond to them are never the same. And so each of us carry in a box and say, here's what I expect from you. And the other person says, well, great, here's what I expect from you. But what happens when that happens? The question is, what do you do when your box, you know, someone hands you a box of someone else's expectations? What do you do? Or what can you do? Well, you have a few different options. One of the options, and this is kind of to the extreme side of things, but you can just get out of the relationship. You can just get out. You can just get a divorce. You can just say, this is not what I signed up for. This is not what I agreed upon. You never said anything about how this is how you're going to handle conflict or you wanted to go live here. I didn't sign up for that. I didn't agree to that. I didn't say yes to that. And so I'm out of here. That's one option. And some couples end up doing that. Another option is you can just power up. You can do whatever you need to do to win, so that both of you would be working out of one box. And you can just kind of manipulate. You can make the other person feel guilty. You can throw things in their face like scripture and, you know, do the whole Bible bullet thing. Well, you know, husbands are called to lead. And you know how leaders, good leaders, serve their wives. And so here, serve your wife. Or, you know, wives are supposed to submit to their husbands, you know, kind of thing. Here, you just now take this. Now you need to submit and take my box and work out of my box. And we can kind of go back and forth, right? But the one who just powers up and says, I'm going to do whatever it takes, wins. And oftentimes in a relationship, one eventually ends up winning. The other person finds, says, fine, I'm giving in. And the other person wins, and the person who wins is happy. Because why not? I mean, both people are now working out of their box, and everything seems fine. But the other person, you know, it's not working out. At least, maybe not long term. And that's the other approach we can do. Instead of powering up, we can just simply give in. And you can give in. You can give in. But you end up becoming somebody you're really not. You end up being somebody that you kind of, you know, conform to something that you're really not. And for a while, it seems to work out in the relationship. Because after all, well, I'm working out of his box now, or I'm working out of her box now, and so he's happy or she's happy, and of course they're happy, right? But you are now becoming somebody you're not. And eventually you end up, you know, losing respect for the person who won, and the person who won ends up, you know, losing respect for the person who lost because they're just conforming, and so I can just kind of manipulate and coerce and just get whatever I want and take advantage of all that. And so there's not a lot of enjoyment out of a marriage like that. And then here's the other option. You can compromise. And this, for many, many couples, ends up becoming the goal. In fact, maybe this is how your parents' relationship went. I mean, they weren't unhappy, but they weren't really enjoying the marriage either, because it was all about compromise. And so in a compromise marriage, it's I'm going to do my part, but I'm going to make sure that you're doing your part too. And so I'm always going to keep an eye on you. There's a scorekeeping going on. There's a record keeping going on. I'm going to do, you know, my thing, but I'm going to make sure you do your thing as well. It's kind of like the contractual relationship. I'll do my thing if you do your thing. And there's always this little bit of just watching with our eyes, just making sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And this plays out, I mean, so many different ways, but when it comes to, like, you know, vacations and holidays, you know, it's like, well, I agreed to go to your parents' house last Christmas, so this Christmas we're going to my parents' house. I don't care if your grandmother is dying, we're going to my parents' house this Christmas, right? And it's all about an agreement, this compromise, 50-50, you do your thing, I do my thing. But here's the reality. When you have a relationship like this, it is void of, I think, a lot of trust. And you need trust to have intimacy. High trust equals high intimacy, but low trust equals low intimacy. And the reason there's a lack of trust, because I'm always keeping my eye out on you, lest I get taken advantage of, lest I miss out on something. And so I'm always going to be watching you. You're always going to be watching me in a compromised relationship. Now, there is another option to all of this, but you're going to have to come back next week to hear it. That's a plug. This week, I want to talk about another way of framing this whole dynamic. And when I heard this given, I was like, this was so helpful. This was so right on. And when this happens, this creates what we would maybe call a debt-debtor relationship. A debt-debtor relationship. In other words, when I hand someone my box of desires and say, here's what I expect from you, what I'm assuming is this: now that I've given you my box, you now owe me. You owe me. You owe me to handle conflict the certain way that I want to handle it. You owe me a certain amount of trips to Hawaii and all these exotic places that I want to go to. You owe me some way of managing time, and you owe me some time with my friends. You owe me to go to bed when I want you to go to bed. You owe me a certain style of house or size of house or, you know, property. You owe me to make sure you look a certain way at bedtime or, you know, keep care of yourself. You owe me to do the dishes. You owe me to do the yard work. You owe me some holidays with my families. You owe me some children. You owe me lots of children. You owe me a car. You owe me finances. And we can just get to the point where we're just saying, here, now that I've given you my box, you owe me these things. I mean, Valentine's Day, right? You're my Valentine. You owe me dinner. You owe me some chocolates. You owe me a card. You owe me at least to do something. You owe me. Another way of saying it is this: that's just what you're supposed to do. That's just what you're supposed to do. That's what a good husband is supposed to do. That's what my father did. Now that's what you're supposed to do. Or that's what a good wife is supposed to do, because that's what I saw my mom do. So now that's what you're just supposed to do. But let me ask you this question. How much gratitude do you express to people who pay you what they owe you? How much gratitude do you give somebody who does what you expect them to do, what they're just supposed to do? How much gratitude do you give somebody who just gives what they're supposed to give? And the answer is what? Not very much. Not very much. I mean, when's the last time you got a letter in the mail from your credit card company saying, "Thank you, dear Mr. Holmes, you paid off your monthly statement last month. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you doing what you're supposed to do, what we just expected you to do." I've never gotten a letter like that. Maybe I have a different credit card company, but I've never gotten a letter, even from my mortgage company, saying, "Wow, we're just so excited that you paid off your mortgage this month. Wow, thank you so much." We just never get that kind of response. Why? Because when you have expectations, it creates this environment, this dynamic where we just have very minimal gratitude. Now, there's another part of this that comes into play, especially when you've been married and you've been married for many years. Because when you've been married for a while, when you've been in a relationship for a while, each person kind of falls into certain roles and routines. And I'm not saying there are certain roles and routines like, you know, husbands ought to do this and, you know, wives ought to do that. I'm just saying just for a healthy marriage, you know, for a marriage that works, a marriage that can be productive, there are just naturally roles that people fall into. There's just natural routines that people fall into. But what happens when you fall into a role or you fall into a routine and you've been doing it for years, then suddenly now, oftentimes, you just kind of expect that other person to do that, right? You just expect. If Beth does what she's been doing ever since we got married, then that's just kind of what you're supposed to do. That's just what I expect from you because you do it all the time. But when you understand this dynamic, the reality is, I am not going to comment on what she does if she does it. I'm only going to say something when she doesn't do it. And I'll give you an example. I have a desire that when I drive home from work every night, that I drive my car up my driveway and into my garage. But oftentimes in the warmer months, I drive home, I drive and I look at my driveway and I look at my garage and there are toys scattered all over my driveway and into my garage, and therefore I have to get out of my car. I know, it's very hard. I got to get out of my car, and I'm like, oh, no, my goodness, you know, the kids left their stuff out again. She knows I don't like this. She knows, you know, kind of thing. And I pull up, and I finally get my car in the garage, and you know, the first thing I say to her, you know, when that happens is, "Did you not see all the toys? Did you not see all the toys?" And I say, "Come here, you know, look. Look at the one thing you didn't do that I expected you to do, right? Forget about everything else that you did today. Forget about everything else that you picked up and cleaned up and managed and put away and all those other things. Let's look at the one thing that you didn't do that I was expecting you to do." I mean, that can happen when you have a marriage full of expectations. That's the kind of dynamic that's oftentimes played out. And it just very minimal gratitude. But here's what gratitude is. Gratitude says this: "Wow, I didn't expect that. Thank you." And it's like, well, what do you mean you didn't expect that? I mean, I've been doing that ever since we got married. I've been doing that every day, you know, for the last month. I've been doing that for years. What do you mean you didn't expect that? Hey, I just want you to know that even though you've done that for every day since we've been married, I just want you to know that I don't expect that from you. Thank you for what you do. Go home and try that out this week. It makes all the difference in the world. I'm telling you, couples who stay together and enjoy it, this is something they know. This is a dynamic that they understand. But there's something else going on in this. And this is kind of a more under the surface. It doesn't really, you know, doesn't really express itself very well. It's harder to see. But here's the other issue when it comes to a debtor relationship. Expectations eliminate the possibility of unconditional love. Because here's the deal. When you owe me, you really can't love me. Because love needs margin. And if you owe me these things, then if you do those things, then where are you really at in the relationship? You're just back to zero. I mean, you're just kind of doing what you're supposed to do. And it's really hard in an environment of expectations. It's really hard to recognize love, and it's really hard to give love, because if you give love, but that's what just they expect, then you're just kind of getting back to the whole square thing. You're just all square. You didn't really love them. You're just doing what they, you know, you're supposed to do in a marriage. You're just doing what a husband's supposed to do. You're just doing what a wife is supposed to do. And again, I bumped into this when we were having our whole twins kind of 6-month craziness, when I was going, you know, I don't really feel very loved. I mean, I just did not feel like my wife loved me very much. And, you know, and she's going, are you crazy? You know, I'm doing all these things, not just for the kids, but for you. But I was saying, you know what, those things, if I was really honest, those things, I just expected those things. I'll just be honest, you wanted the third child more than I wanted the third child, so, you know, you got me into this, so I'm expecting you to take care of all these things. And just to take care of all these things, we're just getting back to zero. And I just realized I hadn't given her no chance to actually show any love to me, because everything that she was doing, I was just expecting her to do. So in an environment like that, it is so hard to give love, and it's so hard to recognize love and recognize any sort of gratitude, because all they're doing is just getting back to zero. And this is why, you know, expectations are so corrosive in a relationship, because it's all about just trying to get up to that bar. It's just trying to get up to the bar. But it's like that bar just kind of keeps moving up, and it's just never enough. It just feels like this pressure every single day. I can't do enough to please you. I can't do enough to satisfy you. I can't do enough to show you I love you, because you just kind of keep raising that bar throughout our marriage. And that's what was going on in ours. I bumped into this whole print. I was like, man, that's me. That's me. And so the question is, how do you get the stuff out of your expectation box, back in the desire box, and keep them there? And what do you do then with that box? What do you do with all your desires? I mean, do you simply just chuck them out the window and say, you know, I'm just not going to think about those things that I want. I'm going to ignore them. I'm just going to give them all up. What do you do? And the answer to that question really comes from the answer to another question. And it's a question that is simple. It's a question that I think maybe all of you deep down inside know the answer to, but it's a question and answer that you will not like. And the question is this: what do they owe you? What do they owe you? And couples who stay together and couples who enjoy their marriage know the answer to this question is what? Nothing. 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 See, in a relationship that is healthy, a relationship that is enjoyable, a relationship that is God-honoring, both parties will say, I owe you everything, but you owe me nothing in return. I'm coming into this marriage saying, I owe you everything, but you owe me nothing back. And if that sounds confusing, it maybe is, but that's unconditional love. That's unconditional love. In fact, that's just not unconditional love. That's what we would call the gospel. That's what the whole Bible's about. That's what the whole point of Jesus is about. That if you understand the story of history, it's that we owed a debt to God. There was a debt-debtor relationship that we had with God. And God, because he loved us, not because of anything we've done, because he loved us, he removed the debt-debtor relationship by sending his son and paying for your sin, paying for the price that you owed God, paying a life that you could not pay back. He paid it all, and he removed the debt-debtor aspect out of that relationship. Why? So that we could experience that kind of unconditional love back and forth. I mean, this is what we sung about this morning, and you may not even know what we were singing this morning, but hey, I love you. I freely give myself. I can freely love you. I don't have to work at it. I don't have to pay you back. I don't have to show you. I don't have to perform. I can just love you for who you are. And I know that you're not expecting anything back from me. I can never pay you back. And God, I'm not expecting anything from you. You're just not a rewards thing as far as to earn my way into heaven. I just want to love you. And God says, I want to love you and I want you to love me freely. That's unconditional love. That's the kind of relationship. That's the kind of love that we are to have, not just with God, but he calls us to love each other like that, especially in our marriages. Because as we talked about last week, a marriage, a healthy marriage, is designed to reflect the relationship that God wants to have with us. And so this is why Paul says, Ephesians 5:1, be imitators of God. Be imitators of God. Therefore, as dearly loved children, who owed a debt to God, but God says, I'm going to remove the whole debt-debtor thing once and for all. And he says, live a life of love just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us. Just as Christ said, hey, I'm going to give myself freely to you. I'm going to give myself fully to you, but you owe me nothing in return. That kind of dynamic, he says, I want you now to put into your marriage. That you owe them everything. Give them everything. Give them your life. Give them all the love that you can, but expect nothing back. And if you do that, he says, I'm telling you, that's a marriage that not will just stay and together and go the distance, but a marriage that you will enjoy. So here's the two questions before we go. The first question is very simple. What's in your box? What's in your box full of desires? What's in your box? And I'll tell you, it's amazing. I've talked to many men who are kind of in their mid-stage of life, and I ask them, what is it that you want? Just what is it that you want? And they'll look at me and go, you know, I'm not sure anymore. I don't know. I don't know. It's a very hard question to answer. But you need to know what's in your box. But the second question is this. Who's actually carrying it around? Who's carrying it around? Because if your desires, then you should be carrying around. But if you've handed it off to somebody, just to know it is not a bunch of desires for them. It is a weight. It is an expectation, a box of expectations that just feels like pressure every single day to live up to. But if you want a healthy marriage, you need to figure those two questions out. And so the homework assignment is sometime this week, not when you drive home today from church. Sometime this week, have that conversation with your spouse. Hey, what's in your box? Just, you know, let's talk about that. What's in your box? And I'll talk about what's in my box. But the harder question is, hey, is there anything that you're carrying around that they're my desires that feel like expectations to you? Is there anything that you're carrying around, the feeling, the pressure, the weight of if I don't, then he's going to be disappointed or she's going to be disappointed? Because honestly, and I hope you mean this, I don't want you to carry this stuff around. You don't owe me anything. And I just want you to know that. I love you, and I owe you my whole life. I owe you all the love I can give you. But I just want you to know, you don't owe me anything. Can you imagine when two couples say that to each other and actually mean it, what kind of relationship they can enjoy together? When they're saying, I love you, and I'm going to give you all my love and all of my life, but you don't owe me anything. That's the kind of dynamic that Christ wants us to have. Because that's the kind of dynamic that reflects our relationship with him. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much. Thanks, first of all, for our spouses who put up with us, who put up with the silliness and the craziness of these expectations that we've laid upon them. God, forgive us for doing that. Maybe we didn't even realize we were doing that. But God, now that we know this is the dynamic that's being played out, maybe, and this is something that we need to address, I pray that you give us the courage, the grace, the gentleness to talk about this with our spouse this week. God, I can speak for everyone in the room. We want a relationship that we can enjoy, and this is how it's done. We thank you that you modeled all this first for us, as you always do. I pray, Lord, that as we do this, this would be a reflection of your love for us. that the world would see our marriages as different. It's not a contract, it's a covenant, and it's not a relationship full of expectations. Yes, we have desires, but we keep them in our box. We don't put that weight on anybody else, because that's not what you did for us. Help us to have a life of gratitude for our spouse, a life of full of appreciation. Help us just to open our eyes to see how much our spouse do for us and love us and care for us. May our marriages really, truly be marked by this phrase, unconditional love. We thank you for Jesus, who gives us the motivation, the means, everything possible for do this. Change our hearts. Help us to become more like him in this. We need you, God, to do this in our lives. Our marriages need you. Help us turn to you for all of this. We pray this in Jesus' precious name. Amen.